Mr. Emery, Real 10. You were telling me about an incident, when you were waking up.
Yeah, it was in the afternoon. It was a cross-country. Well, I had very little sleep during the day because of all the noise that was going on, and I never got, I was about 14th in the cross-country, especially if it was soft sand you were running across as well, about eight or 9 miles it was. So I didn't do so very well on that, but they wouldn't excuse me the night patrol the previous night. Oh, no, you've got all morning, you can sleep all morning. Well, but it was pretty tough there in many ways there. There was two perimeters of barbed wire. In between the inner perimeter and the outer perimeter was the toilets. And you could use the toilets during the day down. That was a bit like chickens on a roost, all that. You know, everybody's going to read their letters from, oh, I don't know why. You've got a bit of peace and quiet down there. But at night, after it was dark, you didn't go down there, I suppose. It was dangerous. You didn't know it was the Jews and all that. So, I don't know. They used to put out great big latrine buckets all around the lines, and you use the latrine buckets. But every day, I thought, what a job. It used to be an Arab come round with those milk yokes. You used to see the maids on his milk yoke on. He'd take bucket on each end and go slopping. Oh, I don't know what he'd do with it. Took these urine buckets away and emptied them. That was his job. And the bottom of his nightshirt was always soaking wet. I never had any tubings, I shouldn't think, but... But I always thought you weren't allowed to use the toilets at night. But if you went through the two perimeters of barbed wire, it was a sandy patch, and then there was an orange grove. Lovely oranges. You used to pick all the oranges, trailers of oranges, and tip them into drainage dips because they weren't selling them, you know. Trade went there then in 46, I suppose. You see a great big trailer load of... must have been tons, say 10 tons. They take them up, and the irrigation or drainage as well for the rains, and that was about 6 or 8 feet deep on the side road, and they just tip them all in there. But anyway, we used to go, I used to lead a little raid out. Oh, fancy oranges tonight then, lads. Oh, I do. So three of us, we'd empty a kit bag out and go and fill up a big kit bag full, all hand-picked, lovely jabbers. You could eat the grapefruit without sugar, they were that difference between buying them here and buying them there, you know. And I did. I was just send oranges home. You were allowed to send some at home. No, so I didn't weigh over £10, I think. But I used to make up a little long box with about 6 hours, buy them up with telephone wire, and never had any trouble. Always arrived home, you know. Considering things, I sent a box of that Belgian family. They received theirs as well. But in that orange grove, they had a Jewish man patrolling around with two great big mastiff dogs on chains. Stop the arrows from pinching you, and a gun as well, a shotgun under his arm. We used to wait till he was gone and go in and pinch, so we lived well on the oranges. But
anything else about your time there?
I used to do all nights up at the Coast Guard. Eventually, I slept. I had to sleep up there in the end, but that was a bit rough because you slept during the day, and it was cold on the roof at night. This cold wind was straight and off the sea, you know, and... there's two of you out there working the radio, but nothing really, apart from the incidents I've said. When we first got, you could go up into Darrow, and they had a couple of cafes out there, had an open-air picture house. You go and sit in the cafe, and always very small eggs there, I don't know, little tiny yolk, but you go in a cafe, a Jewish cafe, and buy anything there. And if there was an empty table there, and another table there with Jewish family sat, and you sit down there, they'd all get up from there and walk away and sit somewhere else. Now, I know somebody was out there in 1940, he was in the British Army, out in the Jews couldn't do enough on them when Hitler was galloping up the down through Greece and all that, getting close. British soldiers would welcome here. He said he never found any trouble with the Palestine, with the Jewish people in 1941. And fights and all, they wouldn't sit near you, and the pictures was the same. If you were sat in a picture, and they were next to them, it wasn't any room, they'd all turn their chairs with their backs to you, sort of, and things like that. You weren't really...
What about the Arabs? How did you get on with them?
Well, they were still living the same way then as what they were in biblical days. Things hadn't changed. You would have thought you were in... Jesus' time when you see them there. Still exactly the same, crouched down the side of the road with their hood up over the sand blowing everywhere, and their flock of goats there, exactly the same. I'll give it the Jews, progressive, all cultivated everywhere. Their kibbutzes and all that, very, very highly. And you could go along on night patrol, you could put up at 3 o'clock at a little roadside stall and get fresh orange juice, and he'd cut six jabbers out and squeeze it all out for, usually the officer paid anyway, only four, or you could get tea, cut down beer bottles and with the rough edges furled off.
So you didn't get much contact with the Arabs?
Well, no, I never got any contact with the Jews, really. We went out to the Palestine police. He got invited by a Palestine policeman up there for a drink. We went up there. Well, he obviously said he was living in paradise up to what we were. £5 a week, £20 a month. You know, that was for an ordinary constable. He come from London. He showed us a letter that he received from the police. We know who you are. We will get you in the end, like from one of these Jewish organisations. He said, but everybody gets these. But they were up there at a bar, and it was luxury. We were. I slept the first week we got to Camp 71. There was no straw for polyasses. There were nothing. So we had the outer casing, and the beds were 10 slats, wooden slats, 3 inches deep by an inch wide, set in two little trestles. And I could have been an Indian faker. I slept on there for 5 days or whatever it was without any straw, you know. And now, of course, it'd be you and they'd be writing to their MPs and whatnot else. And but although they moaned, they all accepted it as part and parcel. You had to sleep with your rifle in your bed. You daren't leave your rifle lying about because they reckon the Arab Jews are getting in pinch them. I was to come back at 12 o'clock at night after a late patrol and sleep with a rifle in bed and things like that. no hot water. The wash basin was outside with four. We used to go up there and wash in, under the cold taps. Usual business with a cut down petrol tin and a half cut down as a wash basin. Three or four of us use that if it's a bit of luck and all that sort of business.
It's quite tough.
It was a tough life, yeah. I was pretty hard, and you know, so anyway, was there, and we did go to Haifa to see a show with Roger Lively, and I forget what it was called now. He was an actor, I don't remember him, Roger Lively. Yeah, well, he was about in but usually it was sort of camp cars that the regiment put on there. So we had pictures twice a week. We had the Naffy there with the tombola, as usual. That was the only game that was allowed, tombola, you know. Anybody caught gambling with money with an apple cart, any with cards. There was no electric light in the tents. It was all candles and things like that. And we had a hurricane lamp, I think, in there as well. It was a big marquee, about 24 of us, 12 from 12, like. But we had our laughs, ups and downs. You made life was what you made it.
And how long were you at Camp 71?
All the time. I got them off from there. So they started doing B releases then, which come out before your time. And my pal Harry, he was he worked for Scafford in Great Britain. And he was a manager of site foreman there, so he got, and he went, he didn't want to go, but he said, I'm a married man, I got two children, I got to go, so he went. So they started, then we had Sam Thornton, he was in the Signal Regiment, he come from Stirling, he was a stonemason, he used to cut all the curb stones out of it, and he went, he got class, B release, and away went Sam. Well, Sam, he was a married man with a couple of children, he was a lot older than us, but he was one of our drinking party. And about 4 days later, and all, nothing else to do at night, only go out the naffy, you didn't always have money for, so we were lying on our beds there, and all of a sudden, you heard this Scots voice outside. And the flat, sent flat, and said, who is it? It's Sam, back again. What's happening? He said, oh, I didn't want it. He said, I couldn't do it. He said, I had to come back. So he turned around and asked if he could come back to the regiment, so they let him come all the way back from Cairo, or no, Alexandria, from the transit camp there. 6 weeks later, end of March, something like that, they offered me B release. What in the hell for? I don't know, because I was only a second assistant on a cardboard making machine. But I thought, well, all the lads is going, I'll go. Sam went the second time. Him that got wounded in the mouth, I said, with the hair lip. He was another, that was the three of us I can remember. So off we went.
That's March 46.
March, yeah. End of March for April 46, something like that.
Right about April. Then.
Yeah, I got into England on Good Friday. So, had my medical and all that. Got to A1. Went from Lydd railway station, down across by troop train. The troop train come down from the Lebanon in up around Syria, where there was all British troops. Chock-a-block, no room at all. And we were on the veranda, the three of us. So I tied my kit back on the veranda, three or four times round the railings on the veranda. We went down over the railway bridge at El Cantaro, through Ismailia, down and stopped at Zagazig, I think it was. As soon as the train stopped, there on they come, the Arab boys, eggs and bread, orange, peanuts, lovely roast peanuts and all that, walking down, selling down all, they used to all know what troops are, you know, and all that sort of business. Anyway, the train started to move. So then coming down then and jumping off the veranda, this bloke had his kit back there, not tied on. Down come the last Arab, and the train was doing about 5 or 6 miles an hour then. Go through the door, come the last Arab boy, out went his foot, bang, off went his kit bag, and the Arab boy after him. And he lost his kit bag with all his kit in. I don't know what happened to him, but I didn't know the chap anyway, but by not using his loaf, he'd lost his kit, all his kit, you know, in there. So whether they made him pay for it, I don't know, because you had to hand all your KD in when you got down the Alexander. So anyway, down to Alexandria, we had about 3 or 4 days there at our, then we got a boat allocated to us, the SS Medina Victory, I always remember, the Yankee Liberty ship. Used to lie there sunbathing, lovely it was, nothing to do all day, just, and the Indian MO gave us our medical inspection before we. I'm stuck there, of course. KD Short, drop your trousers, and I'm white from ear to there. He said that. No, and I tell a lie. We used to bathe in the nude. I was brown all. He said, that is no good for you. Sunbathing, no good. He said, no good at all. And that was the first person ever told me that sunbathing was, that was the Indian doctor. So we went from there, put our clothes back on, up to the, get the boat. Before we got on the lorry, we had to go through this hut, and there was ATS girls there, and that first time I seen any ATS girls doing it. And it was sheer up, trousers, poor trousers, and they dusted us all with DDT powder, which nowadays, Christ, it's a health hazard. Yeah, a great big puffs of DDT all to stop any. And we got on the Medina Victory. I remember English baskets go home, the little Arab boys were showing us, and we went in the dock gates. I thought very, very friendly. That was the words they were saying. And we used to shout out, King Farouk, and all that sort of. Business. So we caught the Medina Victory, quite nice, crossed the Mediterranean. I dodged all NCO's duties, kept out of the way, called in at Valletta. I thought we were going to get off at Balta and have a look around, but we didn't stop there, pick up a load of Marines. And then across the Mediterranean, during the last from Valletta to Toulon, we had a storm and the ship sprung a leak. Then again, Yankee crew, great big life jackets on. Rushing round there, they'd sprung a leak below the waterline down below, and the Royal Marines was taking a mickey out. Oh, the bloody sailors you are, and all that sort of business. So we get to Toulon in a transit camp there. That's the first time I seen ball played. We had about, that's my wife, we had about 3 days there, waiting for a train, and it was about 24 hour train journey then. Avignon, all the way up by train, wooden seats, around Paris. And caught the to a transit camp in Dieppe then. Went to Dieppe, we had to wait a couple of days there because the weather was rough. And on the, I think the day before or 2 days before Good Friday, it was a paddle boat or my little, you know, a summer cruise thing. This was March or April, and it was all fired on with our usual one of jam, one in cheese, haversack rations. And I got sent down below, you know what, these paddle boats are like seats all the way around, they were down there all packed in, and it was rough. Anyway, we sailed out of harbour, we hadn't been out of harbour, it was 4 hours, I think it was about 4 hour journey of Dieppe to New Haven then, I think, roughly. Sailed out, and it was right up, I got up, I couldn't stand it, I felt sick. And I got up on deck, and I'm not kidding, we were all at the top of the gangway there, stood on deck, and the sea was, and it was soaked to the skin, but they couldn't stand that smell of diesel. And they were all they've all been sick of one over one another. But you could be right up on the top, you could see ships everywhere, and next week we were down in the trough there and you couldn't see anything. But anyway, we got to New Haven. I went from there, New Haven, to Woolwich Depot, the RA, got me interviewed there and gave him a character. I don't know he knew much about me because he'd never seen me before. He gave me, went down to Guildford, down to the Mob Centre, all that riffraff they give you, showed you on the news about potatoes there, measuring up and things, how many, what's the length of your arm, and try this jacket. So none of that when I got there. Oh, yeah, that'll suit you, and all that sort of like came out. And none of us wanted to wear the damn stuff when we got I couldn't get used to it. And then we got the mob. We all came up to London.
That was April by then, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was April, yeah. We all came up to London. We got told off in the London pub when we were all going there, making our last farewells to go to our different railway station for making a noise in the London pub. Disgusting soldiers like you and all that busybody. And I came home and I had 3 weeks leave, which was all you were entitled to, coming out for B release. You got 3 months if you came out under ordinary release, plus a day for every month you were overseas. So I got 3 weeks leave and started back to work. And I wish 6 weeks after I was back at work, I'd kick myself for ever coming out.
So you returned to work at the cardboard factory?
Yeah, well, if you come out on B release, you had to go back to what you were when you got called up, you know. That was one of the stipulations, whether it was adhered to, I don't know, but I did. I went back there and...
What upset you? Did you have difficulty acclimatising?
Oh, yeah. And not only, I would say, you just spent 4 years out in open air, never been indoors at all, and you've never seen cardboard making machines, have you? But it's all steam, water, low rules, big drying cylinders, hot air. Mills, whilst on duty, any problems when you make it, you'd have to get up from your mill and put it right. It took 4 hours sort of business. You knocked about a stone off of being about 3 weeks there. Plus the fact it was 12-hour shifts as well. The first week I went back to work, I worked for 71 hours. Oh, I got, because I never had a tax, you know, I got taxed at basic tax, whatever it was, and I took home £7.01 for 71 hours. That was shift work. It was 11 pence, yeah, 11 pence an hour, second assistant, and on the making machine. And if your mate was out bad, the other two on, the three of you, one on each shift, if one stayed out bad, the other two did the job for single time, 12 hours each, to keep his job open. Didn't pay you time and a half, things like that. So after that, I was back to Civvy Street, and then I went back in. I went back in July 52, with a 635 Light ACAT Regiment, which was a TA regiment for Carnarvon.
What, you enlisted as a TA?
No, I got called up with a Z training then for a fortnight.
Tell us about that. So you carried on working at the cardboard?
Oh yeah, I stayed there right till I got made redundant in 1981.
So there was the 365 Light ACAC.
Yeah, Light ACAC, both of us. Down it, so we went down to Bude, and there was a camp down there at Bude, Cleve Camp at Bude somewhere, just outside of Bude, ACAC camp. I went there for their fortnight TA camp, and we went there. I went there, and I met, there was quite a few that was in the same regiment as we. As I was going through the gates, and another lorry stopped from the train, and off was getting a load. And the funny thing enough, it was quite a lot of gun crew, quite a few of the gun crew, and evidently they kept all those it was in, called up as Z training on the same gun, and they did better shooting at the sleeves than what the TA blokes did. They had more hits.
And you were back on the wirelesses?
Back on the radio, yeah.
And this is summer 52, Korea time.
Yeah, Korea time, yeah.
And what did you enjoy it? Get a bit old?
Back under canvas again? Yeah, I did mind it, yeah. It used to come round in the... bang on the 10 at 6 o'clock and you'd hear them all shouting out, only another 11 more days, that was all them. It was a lot of them didn't like it, but it didn't bother me. I was married to Peg then. We had our first child, but I think I got about, what was it? For a fortnight's camp with Marilyn and I, it was about £17, I think, for the fortnight. That's what it was.
And
with Bounty, that
and
was.
And that was your last military.
Yeah, then I got, well, it says on my military records in there, discharged from military duties when I got 41, I think. And I was,
Now, what about, did you keep in touch with any of your old comrades? Are you a member of the Regimental Association? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, no, I would say they all, mostly, I mean, it was a northeastern regiment, come from tiny T's all around there. But a lot of them, yeah, I kept it. Harry, Bill, I see he's the last one that's alive now, another Bill in the hall. Barry up at Dudley, Alan Grundy, who lived up in York in Lancashire somewhere. Yeah, but they've all passed on now. But I'm still in. I still write to Bill. I still write to one or two of the widows. Still write to me as well. Yeah.
But there was no regimental association.
Well, no, because they all. I could have joined the RA Association, but in Bristol. But then again, it's nobody you knew. It's like, well, it's like going down in, going in a pub in town, isn't it? Really, you don't know. If there was somebody there that you knew, it's all. I suppose you could make your own friends. But we were married, just been married. Well, I'm being long married in 1948, and we had our eldest son.
Now, how do you think your wartime experiences had affected you mentally and physically, good and bad?
Education. I worked in a man's environment, as I say, from 14 onwards, in a man's factory. But it was still. I was lucky. I never got no legs blown off, feet blown off, or anything like that. You know, I suppose. But it was to me. I got no regrets. So, yeah.
What sort of education? What do you mean by education?
Well, it taught you things about life that you would never have learnt staying in, to look after yourself more to start with, didn't you? Yeah. I could darn socks. I could sew buttons on. I could sew with flashes on. You know, all things like. Did my own washing half the time. Washed it in the river or in a board it up in a petrol tin on. A bit of petrol poured in the ground, wrung it, put it most of it out. Half of it went back on damp again, but it never dried it. I was pretty self-sufficient. I was.
You didn't regret it?
No, I didn't. Oh, I should have been disappointed if I hadn't gone.
Thank you very much. Yeah.